Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and on our podcast, which is now available on Spotify. I'm AD Packham, and we are telling them all that we stand or fall in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday we saw Chris Heaton radically change formation, and despite going down 4-0 to current champions Chelsea, most of us went home heartened by our performance. However, that said, the history books will still say we lost 4-0. So, we now sit just a point above the bottom three, and one of the reasons for that is lack of goals. However, we have broken our transfer record once more to bring in striker Jurgen Locadia from PSV for £14 million. Let's hope he can cure our malaise in front of goal. Also this week, we have waved goodbye with thanks to Kazenga Luwalua, who has joined Sunderland. And today, we take a break from the league as we all get cup fever once more, and Dale Stevens will be hungry for revenge at Middlesbrough. And then on Wednesday, we head down the coast to face Southampton in a game that seems to be growing in importance. Also on Wednesday is the small matter of the transfer window closing. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back the author of the Brighton, but only at home blog, Jason Thackeray. Hello, Jason, how are you?
Hello, AD, I'm fine, thank you very much.
It's good to have you back in situ.
It's great to be back.
Are you training for any marathons or anything?
I'm not training for a marathon, no.
Why is that? Last time you were on, you did say that you were going to do no more.
I'm entered in the marathon because I deferred last year's entry due to injury, but that injury went on and on. So I'm back running now. I'm likely to do the BM10K, which is the cut-down version, on the same day in the morning.
That's about a quarter of a marathon, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. But I think the marathon running days may be over.
Fair enough. Well done for doing what you did before, because I know you actually did raise a fair few quid.
So. Indeed. Yeah. So, Jason, how is your Albion mojo at the moment?
Oh, it's quite low, I guess. I don't know. It's been all over the place, really. It's up and down. So
has the initial excitement of being in the Premier League worn off as this bad run continued?
It has, to an extent. Yeah, I know that's not everyone's view. I know a lot of people are still really excited about it. I'm slightly worried that the best thing that we can do over the next couple of years is be a West Brom or a Stoke or whatever and just survive every season.
Did you not think that was always going to be the case?
I did. The journey's always better than being there, isn't it? So last season, I really wanted us to get into the Premier League, and you know, that season is still my favourite season ever. Actually, being here now, you can see how hard it is and how tough it is and how much money and effort you need just to almost stand still and compete in that group of clubs at the bottom.
I mean, how much of that do you think is sort of slightly self-inflicted by the fact that back in August we couldn't land the striker that we wanted?
I think it would be partly to do with that. I mean, you never know what.
Because on many aspects, we've competed quite well, haven't we?
We have. We were competing extremely well at the back, and I think we've still got a very good defensive record, although we seem to have gone to pot at set pieces a little bit. But at the back, it's that attacking part. It's scoring goals is our problem. Okay, whereas last season it wasn't.
Well, let's start with last Saturday then. Chelsea came a knock in, and we're all a bit shocked by the formation now.
It's something that, well, you'd like to think clearly they've been working on. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, well, is he really going to play three centre-backs? I mean, they're three very good centre-backs. And to be honest, a couple of things sprang to mind. One, if he is, are they going to get under each other's feet? And two, are they really going to, or is he going to play Goldson in a kind of a more brick-cut-like role? So it's not actually, and it's a bit sort of a red herring. Yes, there's a centre-back there, but he's going to be played slightly advanced. As it transpired, it was a 5-3-2. Mm. And Heaton said specifically to actually counter what Chelsea were trying to do, which was have their full-backs bomb on.
Heaton subsequently said that he wasn't expecting Batshuayi to play, and that took them by surprise, and a lot of the formation was...
Well, how would it have changed if he hadn't? Who was he expecting to play?
I have no idea.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's not as if he knew 3 days ahead of it that it was not going to be Morata, so...
Yeah, Morata was suspended, so it had to be Batshuayi. I was fully expecting Batshuayi to play myself.
But Jason, I for one, was absolutely delighted to see Connor Goldson back in the starting lineup, and I've
been banging a drum a little bit. But I'm not saying he's become a bad player overnight, but Duffy is badly out of form at the moment.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I was very glad to see Goldson in. I think there's a real argument for playing Goldson instead of Duffy at the moment. We were talking about five at the back. We had a meeting of the Albion Mag Writers Group on Monday, and me and Al were talking about this. I said, for God's sake, if you're going to play five at the back, don't have Shane Duffy in the middle of it because he's a liability at the moment.
Ideally, if you're going to play that formation, you want someone who's a little bit more mobile and who can read the game, like, I don't know, Hunemeyer.
I was about to say, a back three of Hunemeyer, Duncan and Goldson, I think, is actually, well, it's fairly mobile. It's not the tallest, but then, hey, they are still actually all over 6 feet. It's just that Duffy just towers over them still. But the interesting thing is we haven't played five at the back since Mickey Adams days, and it's brilliant that actually I do seem to remember Gus Poyet saying that he tried five at the back, and they worked on so many things, and he just turned around and he said, I can't get it to work. They don't know what they're doing, or they're just going back to default. So it's actually not so bad necessarily that actually they did manage to translate two or five quite well. I mean, of all time people you're going to do it against, Chelsea is a very interesting one. One, you think, do you actually experiment, using the word experiment in commas, against the champions? Or is it your fact you think, well, we're probably going to lose anyway, so let's give it a bash anyway. And, you know, if it works against Chelsea, it might well work against others.
See, I don't like this whole attitude of we're probably going to lose. At the end of the day...
Well, we are.
Why?
Yeah.
Because if Chelsea turn up, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk about it. The second goal is a classic example of that. There's nothing you can do about it.
But if you go out on the pitch with the attitude of we're probably going to lose, you're going to lose. If you go out there with the attitude, we've got a chance.
The players won't.
Come on, boys, let's do this.
The players won't.
You're going to be in it.
The players won't. It's just reality will set in that the probability, not we are going to lose, but the probability is that we're going to lose.
I think we need to be mentally more positive as well.
I'm sure the players are.
No, I think they wander around these big grounds taking selfies themselves. I think they think they're below the big sides.
It's just sort of looking at the floodlights going, ugh.
So, I mean, do you think that's a first-season syndrome then, to a certain
degree? Yes. I don't think they'll be...
You think they'll still stay struck?
I think they are at the moment. I don't think they will be next season if we survive. I think the ones that stay in the squad won't be.
Because one of the performances that we talk about, and we will talk about come the end of the season, it's a game that we were sadly lacking a striker in, and it's a game that we had very, very good opportunities to win, was the game at Old Trafford.
Yeah, it was. And, yeah, I mean, I was there. We were absolutely fantastic that day. But that's probably the exception that proves the star-struck rule, in a way, because we weren't as defensive. We didn't sit back. We went for them. But they... played a formation that allowed us to. They had a big, big gap in midfield. They basically had two in midfield.
But the point is that we didn't have that against Chelsea. I mean, the scoreline, all right, they stuck four away, we didn't. But actually, we were probably just as, not necessarily as good. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, just to play devil's advocate, if we
were fantastic against Chelsea.
If we hadn't given them a two-goal head start, we had every chance of getting
something. That's my point. Yeah. Like, the scoreline is what changed it. The first two goals in the first 5 minutes. If Man U had scored two goals in the first 5 minutes, your consideration of how the Albion played would change. You think, well, at least we battled for the last 85 minutes. Well, that's fine. But
let's talk about that first goal then. And it was... The ball found its way out to Moses, who crossed, and Stephen stuck out a leg, and the ball falls to Hazard, who did the rest. And it was just backing off and backing off and backing off.
Well, it wasn't backing off. It was actually more to do with the point that there was all these defenders in the box, and one not realising that... Because when the ball came in, it wasn't actually very close to a Chelsea player. So if Stevens had left it, it was either Duffy or Donker. One of the others was there to clear it. But for the fact he did stick out a leg, it diverted it away from another defender.
It would have been cleared, to be fair, if Stevens hadn't done that. But I mean,
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just one of those unlucky things. And then, you know, there was the pounce. And, you know, it looks like an error on Stevens' part. But the point is if Stevens, it sounds like criticism, if it's not, it's not, because your first, it's counterintuitive to leave the ball alone in the penalty area. But if he had left it alone, it would have been cleared. But it's just, yeah, it's one of those things. Unlucky, or you could actually say, well, if Stevens had realised what was going on around him, he would have known to have left it. But, you know.
Yeah. I think his position was odd, though. I mean, we go back to five at the back, and I think what we didn't say was that it suited the full-backs. I mean, Schlotto was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Suttner's a very good footballer going forward.
Yeah.
Neither are that strong at defending in certain situations. And I think Suttner sat too far off Moses, and Stevens was covering Suttner and almost making a fourth centre back. Mm. And because we had the three centre backs, he didn't need to. But his instinct is to go in and provide that cover because we've needed it a lot this season.
Which is it. If you're playing a five at the back, there's things that you're doing which you're not used to. You know, like I say, you're used to doing X, Y, Z. Mm. You know, Suttner's used to doing one thing. Bruno or Scalotto are used to doing something else. And in a 5-3-2, your role is different.
It is.
And it's something to get used to. If we play it again, hopefully we'll actually have it even more well ironed out, because as an attacking formation, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, but how do you legislate for the second goal?
You don't.
You don't. Duncan Proper shouldn't. Maybe you've not given it away. After that, there's nothing.
Nothing
you can
to do about it. Two back heels and then a hard, low, accurate shot.
But before the second goal, we've got to talk about this. March fired in a... was that before? Oh, no.
Yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't. Scalotto leads a charge forwards, and a great team move sees Grace fire over, which was straight after.
We did have a chance immediately. In between the two Chelsea goals, we did have a chance. We did get forwards. You know, it's the fourth minute. I know we're one down, but it's the fourth minute, and we're attacking. WTF. You know, so when in midfield and you're being careless and your passes aren't accurate, you notice that so many of Chelsea's passes were accurate until such time as we got really into their faces, and then the numbers that actually went behind a player, or, you know, they seem to lose confidence themselves. I mean, it's incredible that we could lose 4-0 against Chelsea, but the point is that, you know, for so much of the game, you know, we were their equals, and then Hazard turned up and decided to put on a show. And when you've got that, you know, in a given situation, as we said, there's nothing you can do about it.
Jason, it was, I mean, the fact that they scored that, and it was sublime.
It was beautiful. Like,
it had several shades of woof about it, and the finish as well. But it was, I mean,
we'd be screaming about it if it was us.
It was the speed at which they were moving the ball, which was ultimately what did us.
It was fast, one touch, back heel. The movement was fantastic. They knew exactly where each other was going to be. Even the finish was brilliant. I said in my blog, if we'd scored a goal like that, it would be straight on the highlights reel. We'd be showing it before every single game.
Absolutely. But the thing is, every
chance of being goal of the season as well, which basically means we get to see ourselves
being battered
several times over the course of the season.
Well, no, the thing is, what you've also got is that this is an example of, it's not about the positive mental attitude that, you know, we need when you have something like that. But this is what Chelsea can do. I mean, Arsenal didn't really show it. Man United didn't really show it. Man City, we were, you know, rabbits in the headlight that day. But because they can play fast, you know, every single pass seems to be known 10 minutes before it happens. And when you've got that fast bang, 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 therein lies the difference between the quality of the likes of what Chelsea have got and the quality. Yes, we have players that can do it. They might be able to do it once a game. For them, it's their stock in trade. And therein lies the difference.
OK, so we're 2-0 down. We're giving them a 2-0 head start. And it wasn't like we hadn't started playing, because we were when we just discussed that chance for Gross. But we're going to talk about the Culture Club bass player now. And March fires in a cross from midway inside the Chelsea half. Caballero makes a hash of it under pressure from Gross, and the ball falls to Schelotto, who drives into the box and was tripped. The ref said no penalty.
I can understand why he said no, because he might not have had a clear sight of it. It's one of those where, because it's happening, you can see it coming. You think, you know, everyone's going, there's a penalty coming up here if he doesn't get the ball. So it's kind of one of those situations where it's not obvious. Has Scalotto dived? Has the keeper stopped in time? Has he taken him out? And seeing as, you know, the keeper's body is in between him and the ref, you can understand to a point why the ref hasn't given it. The linesman, on the other hand, no excuse. Clear as day that he should have seen that.
Well, go on.
Yeah, I mean, the reason he was in the wrong position is because he's a fat tub of lard who can't keep up with play.
Well, this is it. A lot of other media outlets and pundits have actually commented on the fact that how unfit John Moss actually is.
Yeah,
and that
he wasn't.
It wasn't just this incident. The fact that he wasn't actually keeping up with play for the whole game.
He's literally not fit to referee. I'm sorry.
That's the clean chant that we have nowadays. Back in the Golson days, you weren't fit to do something else. Mm. To be honest, I haven't looked at the Match of the Day highlights, so I haven't noticed if there's been a comment on the position of the referee in the first place. But, and to be honest, I never was making a point of looking at where the referee was.
Well, and this, this was what delighted me as well. I have watched the match of the day, and the first thing that Gary Lineker said afterwards was that this wasn't a 4-0 game. The scoreline absolutely flatters Chelsea. Let's talk about that. What word should we use? Should we use marauding for He is a musketeer,
for whom?
Isn't he?
For whom?
Charlotto, cool.
It was brilliant. You were, after the game, AD, you were banging on about you want a Greyhound T-shirt now.
Yeah.
I think...
And Gallagher.
Well, thing is, what he showed was the sort of energy, the rampaging energy, which, frankly, we look like we've been missing all season. You know, where we've been playing, stopping the ball, passing it. He was a gay Caballero. He was, he was going down, chasing lost causes. It was actually fun to watch. And yet, when you see him play as a fullback behind a winger, or play as the right midfield player in front of a fullback, it's almost as if to say, I've got too much traffic in my way here. Whereas if he's on his own, yeah, he can play alongside, play inside to Gross. Yeah, he can play inside to Stevens. But now he's the king of the touchline. Yeah. That's his and his alone, and don't anywhere.
He was just brilliant to watch.
He was absolutely fantastic. Oh yeah, I do. Yeah, I've called him a cult hero. We need one of those cult heroes. Yes. Greyhound T-shirts, definitely.
And therein lies the issue.
And you can get one. There's a company called T-Gulls who there's a group of people, lads, who sit down in the southwest corner, and they've come up with this. They've been designing all these brilliant T-shirts, and they've got a website called T-Gulls.co.uk, and they've got the Bruno one. There's a Duncan Duffy one. There's all sorts. I particularly like the Gates and Bourne one as well, but the El Galgo, that's my
favorite. You like that one, but we had this thing, and it's going to be interesting to see whether Houghton reverts to the 4-4-2 for future games, having played this particular style against Chelsea, or whether now that we've got, and I know we'll talk about him presently, now we've got Lucado who's come in, whether that actually changes what he wants to do. Is he the kind of forward who isn't Murray, isn't Hemed, isn't Baldock, but is maybe a mixture of the three? There's considerations to be had, which maybe have been affecting Chris's thinking because we haven't had that marquee striker. Who knows? So it'll be interesting to see. It's just that actually having played the 5-3-2 and seeing Scalotto play like a devilish madman, it was so exciting to watch.
But, I mean, do you think... then, Jason, that Houghton will continue to rotate the fullbacks? Because another one who had a fantastic game was Marcus Suttner.
Yeah, I don't know who our first choice left back is. I don't think Houghton does either. I think Charlotto's done enough to keep the shirt. My only concern would be what Al said, that if he's got a winger in front of him, he's not going to be as effective going forward. And I think Bruno is technically better. Defensive-wise, they're about the same. Neither's the greatest defensive right-back in the world.
Don't forget we had no knockout this game, this particular game. Now, Bruno and knockout worked together very, very well. Now, if you had Charlotto as one of those, as either of one of those, it really doesn't work as well.
No. But I mean, they're in the Premier League this season. There are seven players that have played every minute of every game, and we've got three of them.
We're talking outfield players.
Yeah,
yeah.
So two of them outfield.
Two,
players.
Yeah, Stevens and Proper.
Yeah.
Well, that's good going. I mean, it's either.
And Dunk's played every minute as well, hasn't he? Hasn't gone.
Very possibly, yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, and they to be honest, they still look as fit as fiddles. So, I'm more than happy with that. No, you're right. Getting back to your earlier comment, it was a 4-0 game because Chelsea stuck four away.
Yeah.
Actually, we were talking about Scalotto. Even the way he got booked, was pantomime stuff. It was a case of, he might have said something waspish. He wasn't booked for any alleged dive. And I know we haven't started talking about the second penalty incident, but it's the way he actually then, even his teammates are saying, look, the referee wants to talk to you, go and talk to him. And a couple were actually pushing him towards the ref. And he was standing there saying to the ref, no, you come and talk to me. I'm thinking, talk about talking yourself into it. So the booking for dissent was fully understood because the penalty incident itself was Moss elsewhere.
Yeah.
Was he elsewhere for that?
No,
he
had a good view of that one.
Oh, I thought he was on the moon.
For the second one, is it as clear cut and is it sort of has it crossed the threshold for it to be a penalty for you?
I'm still saying it was a penalty. I can see why it might not be given, but for
why
me,
is that? Why would you say you can see why?
Because the ref was unsighted, but he didn't actually get to see the push. Scalotto possibly went down too easily. This is a message. If you're going to go down the box, don't make a meal of it. Go down naturally, as you.
Well, if you're going to go down naturally, it's because you've been brought down.
Yeah,
that's the point.
We all know that's not necessarily.
Well, no, but.
So then we're back
to VAR then, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. I think my 11-year-old son got this exactly right. He said after, he said, "Dad, if that had happened in the centre circle, we'd have got a free kick." So therefore, it should be a penalty.
Yeah,
endeth the lesson. Okay, the new formation also brought the best out of David Prupper, who was playing in a more advanced position.
He was, yeah.
About time.
Yeah, definitely, because he looked good going forward.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the chance where we hit the post? Or we reached that point?
No, second half.
We need to rattle on a bit.
Yeah, Dunk pings a trademark ball to Gross, who crosses to Hemed, who really should have scored.
Which was his one then?
That was the one that he really should have scored.
It was going the wrong way.
Scalotto nicks the ball off the dithering Alonso and he wins the corner. Sutton's delivery really should have been buried by Duffy, which again...
Yeah, it's just the whole corners thing, isn't it? Although, again, there's an argument for that one to be a penalty as well. I don't know if they showed that.
That did look a bit pushy as well.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan made a few saves. He was really, really great.
He made an excellent save from the free kick.
He didn't have a chance of any of the goals, really, did he?
Of course not. No, nothing like.
Can't blame Ryan was absolutely fantastic again.
Absolutely.
And yeah, he conceded.
Was it Hazard's free kick or Willian's free kick, or was it Luis? Because he came on and then took a free kick, didn't he?
Luis looked like he was going to take it. Willian actually took it.
Yeah, that was brilliant, though. He's a bit of a pantomime villain, isn't he, David Luiz?
But I think we're going to say pantomime dame.
I was. but I did find it very amusing, the fact that he ran through.
He ran straight to the free kick, didn't he?
Did a little run up, and it was entertainment. We like to.
There is a kind of a touch of Lipizzana run up as well. He's got about it.
But it was okay. Here we go. Scalotto marauds.
That's your favourite word. That's your favourite phrase of the day, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I'm going to use it again later as well. Scalotto marauds down the right and lays off to Gross, who crosses and Proper's diving header cannons off the upright.
Keeper's nowhere.
There you go.
Say what you want to say about it then.
It was one of those moments where I was out of my seat. My arms were up. Yep. I had the raw stuck in my throat, and somehow it came off the post. And we were very, very unlucky at lots of points in that game.
Absolutely. I mean, you're saying about the Hemed header. You know, it wasn't the best crossing as much as the header was slightly behind him. He had to sort of twist his neck to get it. And he actually still did send the keeper the wrong way. Incidentally, a keeper who, from recollection, didn't catch a thing. He flapped at everything.
He was awful, and he made Garth Crook's team of the week.
What? Yeah, but that's Garth Crooks, isn't it? He makes me look like a goalpost.
We've come out of there screaming, "We should have had two penalties." Caballero always saves penalties. That's what one thing he's always good at.
From Hemed.
Hemed scores. Yeah, so... You know,
Hemed's
is the unmovable force against the old thingy against it cliche. Yeah, wallop. Sorry, carry on.
Okay. We know they have a bit.
Well, yeah. I think I would have a major criticism for the Albion defence for the third goal.
It was a bit weird. I mean, I was watching this again last night, and it was the ball broke to Hazard. It was played to him, and it's inside his own half, and he runs. He's got Goldson's like covering him. Chelsea player makes a run, and rather than staying with Hazard, Goldson picked up the runner.
But
no one picked up Hazard, so maybe someone else should be picking up the runner.
That's another issue with three at the back.
That's about the communication as to who does what. Yes. I mean, if he goes flying past you, you know, with a bit of skill, then that's one thing. But yes, Goldson went with the runner. I think there was a couple of other runners that others had to look out for. But it's just the fact that you then saw him and he got to the edge of the penalty area. Think, okay, he's about to shoot. Stop backing off. And I don't suppose there was anyone closer than the penalty spot to him by the time he did shoot. Don't get me wrong, he tucked it away beautifully. But, you know, it was almost, you know, it was it was ridiculous to see.
And then Moses has made it full, but okay, we'll leave it there. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and on our podcast, which you can now get on Spotify. We are brought to you in association with the wonderful oldfootballshirts.com, who are celebrating yet another milestone this week. I'm just passing this over.
What's their milestone then?
Mr. Wares. And Mr. Thackeray.
Okay, what we're looking at here is a kind of, what would you call it, dark crimson shirt.
Yep.
It's got a kind of, I don't know what, there is a name for that particular kind of cross. There's a cross that's a badge there.
Yeah.
With where the one bar goes across it, there's another one above that. Sponsored by Skullac. There's white, a chest with kind of a semicircular pattern to it. Before we guess, is there any particular relevance to the shirt for this week? Apart from the fact there's a number to it?
No.
Okay.
It's the bottom two-thirds look like a Wrexham or a Charlton shirt. And the top third looks like the lighting system designed by someone who spent too much time in rave nightclubs.
Basically, I think that's about the size of it. So we're going for Hacienda United.
I'm going for something maybe... Ex-Yugoslavian. That's no, I was going to go
for the Latvian national shirt actually, but no. Is it a club shirt or a national shirt?
It's a club shirt.
Go on.
Okay, actually, I mean this side, they actually produced some of my favourite shirts I've ever seen actually, and there was a memory of mine growing on holidays in France and picking up Ons magazine and this particular
team. Oh, it's a French team, is it?
It's a French team.
Okay, in that case, I'm going to take a punt and say OG Nice.
No, it wasn't. Okay, but this is what Uncle Phil has to say this week. And it's been a good big week for him. This week, they have hit shirt number 84,000 on oldfootballshirts.com.
As shirts go, there's a lot of anoraks out there.
That's magnificent.
Absolutely.
Magnificent figures. Sadly, it was a rather dull Colwyn Bay shirt. So he chose this one, which is also posted on the site this week. This is the 1991-92 home shirt of French Ligue 1 side FC Metz.
Okay.
They are often known by their two nicknames, Les Grenades, which translates as the Maroons, or Les Graulis. Which is the name of the local dragon vanquished by St. Clement of Metz in medieval folklore.
St. Clement.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Shut up. they play at the 25,636 capacity Stade Municipal Saint-Symphorien. Yeah, that will do. Which is located on...
I have no idea what you're trying to say there.
Which is located on an island in the Moselle River, which flows through the centre of the city. One of the most famous victories came in the 84-85 Cup Winners' Cup tie when they faced Barcelona. They lost the home leg 4-2 and were expected to exit the tournament after the second leg at the Nou Camp. But not so. Yugoslav centre-forward Tony Kubus scored a hat-trick in a memorable 1-4 away win in Spain and an aggregate 5-6 victory.
I don't remember that, but good for them.
Some notable former players for Les Grenades include Emmanuel Adebayor and Robert Pires. And as for British links, the legendary Aberdeen striker and serial caretaker manager Eric Black moved from the Dons in 86 and finished his career with 5 seasons in France, retiring as a player in 1991. Thanks for that very much.
Now, I'm going to ask something. You said that's FC Metz, yeah?
Yeah.
I've got a feeling Gaetan Bong started there. I'll have to look it up. And I've got it completely wrong, and it's a completely different French club that he started at. But something in the back of my mind...
No, it wasn't. I know what you mean. It was Lorient he started with, I believe.
Okay, all right.
But I could be wrong. Answers on a
postcard. We could all be wrong.
Speaking of answers on a postcard, Al, last week we had a show featuring the wonderful Gordon Smith.
Oh, he's lovely.
Who joined us for
well, I tried to sort out a taxi for him.
Which is still available, and you can listen to that as well. But we asked a question on the show to Gordon, and there was a song that was recorded in 1983, and it was going to be released, Should We Ever Have Won the FA Cup.
Have you found a copy of it?
It's a song called When Seagulls Soar. Now, if anyone has got a copy of this anywhere, obviously it was never released because Gordon cocked it up and missed. But he did sing the lead vocal on this song. So we'd love a copy of it. Gordon's
never heard
it. You
don't think those two things are linked? him recording a song and him thinking at the back of his mind, Rob, he gets the pass from Robbo and he thinks, no, that song, no, forget it.
But we now know how musical Gordon is.
He is, actually.
We recorded last week's show in the rehearsal studio in Worthing, and they got a couple of pianos in the foyer and a couple of guitars.
I was tinkled by none other than Keith Emerson, the late Keith Emerson.
Wow. Yeah. And Gordon just started playing like the Beatles songs.
He did,
It was great.
As with a lot of things, for those that have been on the Albion Roar and those who sort of been to do's and evenings, we tend to get the best stories after the microphones have been switched off. So,
but he's going to come back and tell us that.
Absolutely, usually about Paul McCartney, mostly.
Yeah.
This week you got me in my comparisons of referees to things that you spread on toast.
But speaking of people called Smith, it's the transfer window closes this coming Wednesday. And earlier today, I caught up with the original marauding Albion fullback, Peter Smith, who is now an agent. Okay, welcome to the Albion Roar, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, pal, thank you. Very well.
Now, Peter, it's a transfer window. Obviously, you're the original marauding fullback for the Albion. Now we've got another one in Ekael Scalotto, a name I can never pronounce. What are your memories of being at the Albion and being that marauding fullback for us?
I think I was probably, like Liam Brady said, I was probably one of the first memories of being at Brighton. Were obviously, always pleasant, albeit they were in financial difficulty at the time. They probably give me the opportunity to become a footballer based on their finances. And obviously, I took that with both hands. And, I played, quite a few games for the Albion, and every game I always played with my heart on my shirt, because I knew they were in financial difficulty and I wanted the club to, at that time, have league status.
Yeah, but I mean, Peter, you're one of those players that supporters always take to heart, a wholehearted player that left everything out there on the pitch.
And I think that, take me out of the equation, but I think that's all the fans want to see. Yes, they want to see someone with a bit of quality, such as the likes of Bruno, who's a pleasure to watch. He's a pleasure on the eye and he works hard. But I think, in general, all fans want to see their footballers work hard for their team. And I think that goes a long way. Yeah. And I think present day, I think that's slightly lost.
Well, since you retired from playing, you've become an agent, a very successful one, and you've got some very big name clients. But the one that we all love, of course, is Inigo Calderon.
Yeah, Caldy's. I mean, I speak to him probably every other day now. He's playing over in India in the Super League, and when he first came over, he actually stayed at my house for about a month, and we went trialing to Gillingham, to Norwich, to Brentford, and then we got a call off Gus Poyet to bring him down for a trial. And I think Caldy made a lasting impression, not just on the pitch but also off the pitch with the work he did outside of football. He's a great lad, great ambassador for the game, and hopefully at some point he'll come back to the Albion.
I think he will. I mean, he's much loved here, and particularly on the Albion Roar, he's been a guest on the show, and we were interviewing him when we got promoted to the Premier League last year. Actually, at that moment in time, which was magical for all of us, and we managed to share that with everyone as well. But you are now an agent, and the window's closing this coming Wednesday.
Correct. Yeah.
This is the busiest time of the year for you, is it? Or is it?
Well, I mean, this window historically is always is normally loan based. The regulations have changed slightly, that there is no emergency loan after the window closes. I think it'll be a quiet window. I think if you look to date, there's not been many transfers. There's been a few loan deals. It's been quiet. So I'm looking at it as a sporting director from the club's got it right. They've done all their work, in the summer season, and now it's a point of just bringing one or two players in. It's quite interesting because Brighton, I thought, were a bit lacklustre in bringing players in the early part of the season, and I was a bit fretful, thinking they didn't have the bodies in to do the job, or the squad in depth, because, you know, the Premier League, it's unforgiving. It's, you know, you look at Brighton, they're probably 16th in the table now. If they win against West Ham, they could be mid-table. If they lose, they could be in the bottom three.
Well, we've got Southampton before that as well, this coming Wednesday.
So, you know, this window, will there be lots of movement? I don't think there will be. I think we've done a couple of championship moves. Jacob Murphy may go, may come to Brighton. Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, there's a possibility. But other than that, I think it'll be a relatively quiet window.
Now, as an agent, your job isn't just to organise the transfers. You pretty much babysit them all through their lives as well.
Well, it's you know, you can take Joe Lynch for an example, who I've looked after since he was 16. I would suggest he's at least 30 now. I think Joel's 30, and I've been a part of his life for a long time. Equally, with the likes of Rio Ferdinand, who we've looked after for the last 10 years. And, you know, we help him with the car, the property, the house, the marriage, the day-to-day stuff, you know. And to be fair to the players, people don't actually realise what pressure they're under to play every week, to get in the team, to make sure that they've got a new deal. And it is a lot of pressure, and I would suggest the pressure's even more now in this game. So with the influx of overseas players that I think that have been brilliant for the game, but you know, you can look through the Premier League, and there's a lot of overseas players in there. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's up for debate.
I think it certainly is. I mean. Most fans love to see a homegrown player. Look at us with Lewis Dunk at the moment, who's one of our own, and he's come through the system here.
Yeah, I mean,
we've got a few more coming through as well, mostly defenders, yeah. Sadly.
Yeah, I mean, Dunkey is. I think he could have played in the Premier League 3 years ago, or been in and around it. Myself, obviously, he's been loyal to Brighton. He's stayed at the club, and now he's got his opportunity. You know, and hopefully Brighton will retain Premier League status and he'll continue to play. And you'd like to think at some point he'll be in and around the England squad.
I mean, there was rumours of him being in and around the England squad now. I mean, he started off the season very well, possibly tailed off a little bit now. There was an argument that the clubs would be looking at him in this window, and that would improve his chances of possibly going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, we look after Michael Keane, and he had a really good season with Burnley, and based on his performances, based on the media that was wrapped around him at that time, pulled him into the England squad. He had to go. And I think with Dunkey, he goes about his business, but no one really shouts to the rooftops to say how good that player is. And sometimes
apart from
Ian that's
Wright.
What it's. Sorry?
Apart from Ian Wright.
Yeah, but sometimes that needs to be in the media and it needs to be pushed. And then, therefore, that opportunity comes to him.
So you reckon that should come from his agent?
I'm not saying whether it comes from his agent, whether it comes from the football club, whether it comes from, you know, the internet, people doing those stories. But people need to know more about Dunkey and what a quality player he is. And then the more pressure then is applied to the England setup to say, look, let's bring him in. Let's give him an opportunity. Because I think he's more than capable of playing at that level.
OK. Well, we'll leave it there, Peter. We'd love you to come and have a chat with us here in the studio, and we would tell us all about working under Liam Brady. That would be fascinating for us.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. Some interesting stories.
Yeah, you can probably tell them now. Now.
Literally now. Well, I was talking to my friend earlier because I was a student at the time.
Yeah.
And obviously in a student accommodation, four or five of us sitting down, chilling out, and the phone rings, and it, obviously it's Liam Brady. It took us about 3 minutes to confirm who's actually going to get out the sofa and go and actually answer the phone. And when my mate did, he said, "Oh, it's Liam Brady on the phone." Obviously, he knew I'd been for a trial maybe 3 or 4 weeks before. Hence, I thought he was joking around with me. So I refused to answer the phone, put the phone down, and then Liam rung again and said, "Look, it's me, son. I want you to come down for another game." But to be fair to Liam, you know, great man, great footballer, gave me the opportunity to play football, and was, yeah, I still speak to Liam now to this day, and I think he was probably cut his career too short in the managerial space. I think he should have carried on, stayed with it. I know the circumstances at Brighton wasn't fantastic for him, but I think I wished he'd have carried on with his managerial career.
Liam was key to saving the club, and that role will never be forgotten. We'll leave it there, Peter. We'll speak to you again soon. Thanks for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Smith.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that was former Albion right back Peter Smith, who I was chatting to earlier on today. Fascinating insight into the window there, and Liam Brady.
Yeah, that was a great story. I mean, yeah, it's phoning. I suppose if someone's going to phone up University Digs and say it's Liam Brady, I mean, one, the fact that his fellow student had said that his fellow, you know, his housemate had said that he knew he'd heard of Liam Brady and thought it was a wind-up is one thing, but you know, for it to really be that, yeah. I mean, that's such a the way that careers are made and lost, by the fact that your phone mate says, "Oh yeah, he says he's Liam Brady," but
yeah. But I mean, I said there in the interview about what a wholehearted player and the sort of player that fans really really get behind, and we're seeing that with Scalotto now, aren't we?
It's marauding. What can I say? marauding's the word. I mean,
marauding in your blog this week.
To just repeat what I was telling you just before we started recording the show, we were looking at Scalotto on Saturday, and everybody in the bit where we sit is old-time Goldstone fans. They all went, "He's just like Peter Smith."
Yeah, he just goes, "Pilot, there's the hair." Do you remember Peter Smith's one-word nickname?
No.
Marley. No. Everyone called him Marley.
Yeah. My mate called him Peter Smith with those long legs of his.
Okay, well, also, I think another thing that people forget, I mean, he was a decent rampaging, marauding, would get the right word.
Rampaging's good, we like
yeah,
rampaging.
Okay, in a mediocre team, at best a mediocre team, which Brady, because of the fact he had to work with one hand tied behind his back, was always going to be struggling. But I think also people forget that, I mean, if you're going to compare him to, you know, the other fullbacks that we've had in the time since, then yeah, he's not necessarily going to stand out, but he did in a poor team, and he got player of the season, and I think as such got appreciated for it.
He is certainly remembered fondly here, and he'll come and join us and tell us more of those lovely stories.
Absolutely.
Later on. But it is, the transfer window is open. While we were talking to Gordon Smith last week, we signed Jurgen Lacadia. It's another club record signing, £14 million from PSV Eindhoven, so that's 24 million quid we've given them this season.
I hope they're grateful.
Yeah, well,
I think that
perhaps we had some free light bulbs in back.
Well, we were hoping to hear from the Guardian's Dutch football expert Priya Ramesh on the show. But
yeah, she couldn't make it. But you did have a quick natter with her, Joanna. What was she making out? What did she say? Does she believe that Lacadia is a good signing?
Yeah, she does. And I mean, basically, she thinks he'll become good because at PSV, the central midfielders they've got there, they all tend to be wanting. They're greedy, quite selfish, wanting to score goals themselves rather than provide assists. And she's saying with someone like Gross in the team, it'll be like a marriage made in heaven.
Well, even Prupper as well. Because, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I mean, if Prupper is going to play that more advanced role in future, I mean, big if. But, you know, there could be a link up there. I mean, who knows? It was actually, well, I'm sure that, you know, the club do know their way around Europe. Yeah. But if Prupper says, "Well, what do you reckon to Lacadia?" And, you know, they've got had a decent understanding, then
Well, Priya was also saying that he will be more trusted to play centrally here. They didn't necessarily. It was quite often shifted to the left and to the and to the right, and not often played centrally. But when he has played centrally, then that's when he's been scoring most of his goals.
So is he a target man? I mean, do we work out whether he's more of a Murray Hemed type player or more of a Baldock type player? I mean, what do we know about that? Well, or is that something we're just going to have to find out?
I think it's something we're going to have to find out. But I mean, a little bit about him. He was born on the 7th of November. Day after me, 1993.
Hang on, day after you. Does that put you at 24 then? Does it?
Yeah, that's okay. I am 24.
Okay,
how old
fine.
I
yeah.
am. Yes, honestly, Governor.
Sorry, mate. Pause for short story. Do you remember that time with Dean when our good friend Marcus Hancock's actually had your birthday read out? I think it was your 27th birthday, and they said it was your 7th birthday.
Was Adam Elad, yeah, that's
it. Sorry, carry on. Let's have the stats for Lacadia.
Yeah. So, was born in 1993, 6'1", striker winger. It says on Wikipedia. His record for PSV, 127 appearances and 45 goals. That's good.
That's not too shabby,
that's
is it?
That's a reasonable ratio, that, isn't it?
I also suppose it depends on how Houghton intends to use him, but if it is that for that out-and-out striker role, then, you know, it could be sort of something quite exciting. Is he fast? I mean, is he a pacey fella? Or
yeah, he's going to be. But, I mean, let's leave that one there, because, I mean, what we have to know is he's released two singles, Alan. To
Lacadia.
Singles. Lacadia.
Have you heard them?
I have. Do you want to hear it?
Of course I do. To the competition, I can never understand what you go. Now I'm standing empty-handed, thinking while I've had to win it, hoping me just for another hello. I can't let it go.
Oh, that's enough of that. The banging house from Jürgen Lacalia.
Very Europop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Jason, tell our listener what Adrian has just done while he was playing that banging tune.
While I was searching for my glow sticks, Adrian was blowing bubbles over us.
And he still is. We're not. This isn't West Ham, Adrian. Keep with the script. So that's Jürgen Lacalia, Europop star, is it?
He's released two singles. That was Can't Let Go. He's more of a DJ. I mean, he sings a bit. And
wait till he meets Glenn Murray and his indie collection.
He's well into his banging house.
He sounded very influenced by David Guetta. That's all I'm going to say.
We've signed Lacadia and we're in the market.
Not
for...
exactly any of our cup of tea. Is that stuff? Wasn't
it? I've been listening to that all day. Actually, I've quite enjoyed it.
David Guetta is definitely not my cup of tea.
No, it's not really mine. No. But you know,
we can throw one at him. But
it was something different. You know, he's our striker. He likes banging house. Let's hope he can bang in the goals as well.
Leave that one hanging.
But I mean, there's been lots of, unusually for us, there's been lots of media speculation. Now, obviously, this is because we're in the limelight of the Premier League and everyone wants something. But there does seem to be an awful lot of, there's been confirmation that we've made bids for Aidan Flint and from Bristol City and Mitrovic from Newcastle. Rafa Benitez has said...
for Mitrovic? He's a donkey.
Well, Rafa Benitez has come out and said today that they won't sell to another Premier League rival. That's one pretty much staying dead. So we've moved on.
Well, that's
on.
Newcastle going
and
down then.
And the rumour mill is in full operation. And
rumour mill is a ridiculous contraption, isn't it?
But, I mean, there has been some degree of confirmation from the club that...
the club do say nothing. Yeah. It usually comes out... There's always a leaky agent or a leaky... something or other.
But there's a very good chance that Leo Ojoa could be coming back to the club.
There's a very good chance that Leo Ojoa could be coming back to the club, I can't say I'm all that excited. I really can't. He was brilliant for us that particular time, but I still kind of feel there is a level of misty-eyed dewiness about that fella. I mean, he scored some, but he missed a lot more.
I'd have him over Hemed or Murray any day.
Really?
I really would. And I think that sticks Hemed out on loan. I don't think you could, that you'd have three players who are very similar. But I think Joe
is not pacey either, is he?
No, he's not quick, but he's a better target man than the other two.
But that's where we've got Lacardia, who's obviously injured at the moment.
Well, I think he's due back in a couple of weeks. So, yeah. You know. So in that case, in which case, then, yeah, I mean, you've got to get Ojoa back. But Ojoa isn't exactly match fit at the moment either, is he?
No, he's not. No.
So, you know, it's...
He's been in Leicester squad, though. I mean, he hasn't necessarily been playing.
I think I read somewhere he's played 70 minutes the entire season.
Yeah, which is not great. But I think... I don't know. I mean, there seems to be this whole thing of us. It seems quite lazy.
I don't mind a player coming back. I don't mind, you know, this thing about never go back. Well, clearly Glenn Murray's been a total success coming back. Yeah. I'm fine with that. There's no issue with that.
Yeah, Bobby Zamora came back.
Absolutely. And I don't mind Ojoa coming back if for the fact that he was going to do okay.
When's Ashley Barnes coming back?
Well, he's going to Chelsea, so they can. He's. But it's. I think it's just one of those things. I probably do stand alone in this. Yeah. But, you know, I still think that Ojoa's penalty is still a major accident risk to incoming traffic at Heathrow.
it is. But I think we've got to bear in mind this thing that the fans have been saying all season. We need pre-season as well. We need to sign a striker. We've got to sign a striker. And some have got on social media to the point where they said, sign a striker, sign any striker. Yeah. Then we sign one, they say, oh, no, he's rubbish and he's injured. And then we go in for a lot of
all-knowing
armchair fan. Oh, no, he's no good. So, okay, that's the level we're aiming at, I think.
Yes.
And moving on, we've
but
had...
Because people haven't heard of Lacadia, then he's rubbish.
We've turned down offer from Fulham for Ollie Norwood.
Which I don't understand that.
Well, I do
why,
on a certain.
Why not
do,
cash in on him?
I do on a certain level because I think that he's a good Championship player, and we don't know how good he would be in
the Premier League, though. And I actually personally think, and I said this at the beginning of the season, that I think he would be brilliant at this level because he's someone that finds time and space on the ball, and he's the one that's capable of pinging those passes. I mean, he plays a little bit deeper than Gross, maybe.
I think he's a flat-track bully. I think he's good when it's easy for him. I don't think he's good when the going gets tough, and it will be tough every week in the Premier League.
He does go missing a little bit. So the point I'm making about him being a good Championship player is that, you know, we don't know what division we're going to be in next season.
I agree.
So, you know, I could understand it to a point, or if we got someone in to play in the role that he would normally have done who's better, then yes, I could understand it. But for now, I can understand the club rejecting it.
But one person who has left the club, and this is something that makes me incredibly sad.
And me.
We it's only goodbye. Because you're going to make a silly noise now.
Kazenga Lualua, right? Okay, I love Kaz. He was proper box office for us. Okay,
absolutely.
I mean, he was that when we first moved to the Amex. He was that one player, and even with Dean as well. He was that one player that used to get you off your seat every time he got the ball. There was some sort of excitement that something could happen, and even now I still. Obviously, he's had a lot of problems with injuries, and Chris obviously doesn't rate him. But even now, I think he would have something to offer to this team because he does something that no one else does, okay? Which is get to the byline and cross the flipping football. And you know, Glenn Murray's been crying out for that all season. I mean, you've got.
To be fair, Solly March gets to the byline. I mean,
I can't beat the first defender half the time.
So I've got two theories about this.
Go on.
And it involves Lacadia, actually. It ties in quite neatly.
Okay.
I think we play inverse wingers because we don't want to get to the byline because we have nobody in the box to take the cross.
Fair
because
point.
We have two pacey wingers, and if they went outside, Murray would still be on the centre circle, and Gross would either be sitting in the pocket or out wide waiting for the ball back to him.
Okay.
Whenever we get to the byline, we seem to have 0.5 players in the penalty box.
Yeah.
Is this because of the Houghton rules and the shopping, the supermarket trolley, that if the wheels go over the red line, they have to stop and they can't get themselves into the box?
I don't know. I think it's pace. I think with Lacadia, you'll see us go into the box because I think Lacadia will be able to keep up with his Cuerdo or Lucar if they went on the outside.
Okay, so what's the other theory?
Sorry, what? I do see the strikers getting the box.
No, I just see poor crosses.
Yeah.
But then with Kaz, he sometimes got down to the byline, but I also saw, in my mind, when you see the showreel, you see this, like you say, there's the phrase you use, inverse wingers, where he'll be out, cut in, and then, you know, Sorry, what was the other theory that you had about it?
The other theory you about said, us not said, getting to the byline. I'm not sure Knockhart and his Craig are brilliant at crossing the ball.
Neither of them are. No, Knockhart is fundamentally selfish. Solly March, I think it's, you know, you go back to the Manchester United game, I think it was about two or three times the ball went flying along the 6-yard box and no one was there. That's as close as you've ever got. But sorry, did you want to carry on waxing about Cantwell?
Let's basically, because I mean you know, he made 183 appearances, scored 22 goals, which is
it's not bad for a winger.
So I mean, what was your
favourite?
That was what I was going to ask.
You're his muse. You're the one that's blowing smoke up his jacksie. You tell me.
I've got too many to mention now. I mean, I like the I remember one of his first starts, a cross he made for Ashley Barnes to score on his debut against Southampton with Dean. Love that. The combination play he had with Vicente, they seemed to be on the same wavelength when they used to play together. And, you know, and there was an absolutely delightful goal that Vicente scored, which was all down to Kaz getting down to the byline and playing
it. Yeah, remember that, yeah.
There was a time he came on at Charlton when we were 3-0 up already. And who was it?
No, we were 2-0 up. He scored the third. And then he crossed the ball for the fourth, which was Navarro got the fourth. But he took the free kick.
Sparrow,
you're quite right. He took the free kick for the third. But, and I think I just remember that particular cross that he put in for Sparrow. He went flying past their fullback, who did his best to break him, and he got nowhere near him. And the tackle just came flying in, and Kaz just went by.
Jason, you were nodding at some of those.
I was nodding at those. My own favourite Kaz moment, I put this on All Stand Chat this afternoon, it's really to do with my son. Kaz was my son's first hero. He had number 25 on his first Brighton shirt for Kaz, not for Bobby.
Of course, yeah.
And it was against Reading in the FA Cup. We'd swapped our seats from the back of the West Upper to the front of the West
that
Lower.
That was on January the 4th, 2014.
It was. And right in front of us in the last minute of the game, running the clock down.
Yeah.
Kaz decides he's not going to take it into the corner. He's going to beat the fullback about three times using an intricate combination of step
overs. I actually watched that.
Flick
last
it
night.
Off their shins and get us a corner.
That's it, yeah. And then turn do the big crowd of, yeah,
get
come
up.
On, come on.
You know, talking to DJs, he did the DJ arm.
Yeah. He did. I've got a similar thing as well of me playing football in the garden with my daughter Molly. And Molly saying, I'll be Kaz and you be Cog.
And she nutmegged you several times.
And on that note, that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you very much, of course, to Jason Thackeray. You can catch his blog most weeks, Brighton, but only at home, but also quite a lot away.
You're going to change the name of that?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Especially if I write up our trip to Barcelona, but that's a whole other story.
But you also write in the Albion Mag as well, don't you?
I do write in the Albion Mag, available in
when it comes out.
Thanks to Alan Wares as well. Thank you to Peter Smith for joining us, and thank you to Priya Ramesh earlier in the week as well. I've been Eddie Packham. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening. Let me tell you how it will. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. Man. Yeah.
the tax man.